So any questions or comments? Yes.
To respond to an earlier question about the feeling tone of awareness itself, as I noticed in the last sitting, really the feeling tone for my awareness is very pleasant because it's just a very relaxed feeling. And I wonder if it stops me getting in touch with what else is going on, because at the moment I'm in great turmoil because I'm trying to sell my house and it's ghastly. And I've really got vengeful feelings towards the man who wants to buy it. He's not doing it properly. And so I've had some very nasty thoughts. And even my daughter the other day said to me, Mum, you should be more compassionate. But I think in sitting, because when I sit, I've been sitting for quite a long time, I have a very quick way of getting quite relaxed.
I personally, I could actually interpret it in a different way.
Okay.
That, no, very likely you are as in touch as you want to be with these things. And generally, you see, I think we have to be careful of this idea. I know I might be kind of being a bit challenging here, but I think we have to be careful of this idea that stuff are there all the time. Mm-hmm. And then if we dug deep enough or did this deep enough, we'll find it. Personally, what comes to me is more that according to condition, stuff happens. When the condition are gone, it goes. When the condition arise again, it comes up again. But it doesn't mean it's there waiting to go. That I don't really believe in that. So what I would say is that, yeah, when you're in contact with a situation, then it goes, but then when you're not in contact with the situation directly, you might think a little about it, but very likely if the contact is 2-3 days, you know, you forget about it. And then the contact again, and then it goes down again. So I would say what happens actually when we do the awareness, then genuinely, yeah, we cannot just rest. Because right now, the fellow is not here, the house is not here, so I might as well be quiet and relax. I mean,
it's quite nice, yeah.
You know, so, and that is actually a tool. This is a refuge to be able to access this type of stable and balanced awareness. So that you could be in the middle of the field, and because you have access time to time to that, then you might not amplify as much and not shout or. But I think this is what also we have to see in terms of the intensity of it, the amplifying of it, and how often it happens and how long it lasts. That's what is very interesting. It's more how long it lasts. Mm-hmm. So that personally the way I would interpret it.
Thank you.
Yes.
I was really grateful for your reminder that there are multiple feeling tones, because what I noticed is that it gives me a different baseline when I'm in touch with a whole range. Because what I tend to do is pick one feeling tone out, then that fixes the situation. It's that kind of situation or that sort of person. While if I can stay open to that range, it keeps me in a different place altogether.
Exactly. It has a little like de-intensifying effect because of that tendency we have to intensify and to amplify. If we can see, oh yes, I have this difficulty here and that unpleasant feeling tone, but there, actually, it's quite neutral, and there, it's quite pleasant. Then you're going to look at this in a very different way. It's kind of nearly like it's diffused, but it's diffused because you don't intensify it, because it's in this wider context and space. And so I think, as you say, I think it's quite vital to kind of have what I call a multi-perspective with that tool. Yeah.
I just wanted to ask about, I don't quite know how to describe it, but kind of getting pleasant feelings from a pleasant tone from unpleasant tone. So an example might be gossip, where you're doing something that is kind of maybe making you angry underneath it, or less compassionate, or reading things on the internet that you kind of know are going to make you cross, but there's also a pleasure tone, and what the relation, if you have any thoughts about that.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's, and gossip is a wonderful one, because it's true. Any juicy thing, you know? Sometimes people ask me, any juicy latest in the Buddhist? You know? And so just to see that, that's very interesting. Because, in a way, gossip is connected to rumor. And, I mean, there are studies, people study in university, gossiping, actually, and rumor making. And it's fascinating what they can kind of look at the different aspects of it and the different conditions. And so for us, there is this kind of like to look a little bit at what is it about that is pleasant about it. Is it that I get to know something other people don't know? Is it that this person is sharing for me and making me feel special by telling me that? Or generally what we like is when it reinforces our own view. I mean, that's what the internet is so about, you know, like you read, sometimes I read some article and I think, what are the comments going to be, you know? And whew, you really see, like you think, oh, so that's where it can go in terms of commenting, like negative commenting or positive commenting. It's very interesting. And also what they point out, they're also studying the comments on the internet, by the way. And they found out that if you had two or three people who anchored the conversation, then you're actually less of the trolling, nasty, intensifying effect. And also how one troll could derail the whole thing, or three healthy ones could actually keep it on track. Very interesting. So it's kind of looking a little... I'm not saying that one should never gossip, because personally, I think it oils a little the machinery, you know, of interrelationship. But to see, is it kind of what I would like, light sharing of information, to just kind of, you know, feel connected to the different group of people. So that then it remains more in the neutral section, with a little pleasant. And then when arrive, that's really kind of like you have the pleasant tone, but it's tinged, as you point out, with this unpleasantness. And I think it's very important for us. And it seems to me, if we kind of look into gossiping, generally we'll do less of it, because we realize that quite a lot of it is actually relatively unethical, and often can really put oil on the fire. It can be dangerous, especially when, you know, you kind of spread false information. I mean, the best one for me was when somebody asked me, are you and Stephen divorcing? And I said, oh, that's an interesting one. I go, where does this come from? And then it starts to make you doubt yourself. This is the danger, because it makes you question the reality, you know. Like saying there is another reality I'm not aware of. And then it ended up, it was the friend of a friend of a friend who heard that in England, a couple of teachers in a certain area were divorcing. And so, because the only couple they knew was us, I thought, oh, that must be it. But I mean, there were several of them around. So that was very interesting to see how it has spread. I mean, my friend, I think the person who spread it, I think it was pleasant, unpleasant together, possibly. My friend came more from a kind of being worried about it, you know, is it strong? Kind of thing. So in a way, at the end of the line, she was checking. Instead of passing it around. I mean, the same that it was very interesting when Stephen and I got together after a year, we were with friends we had not seen. And what was very interesting, well, they told us, where is your child? We look at each other, child. There is a child in this family. I have nothing against children, but I never had any. So I was like, we looked at each other, we thought, where does this come from? And then it was a story that, you know, if we disrobe, because we were both monks and nuns, if we disrobe, there must be something to it. And so they, from that, they got that we must have had a child. So that was also very fascinating. So it's in a way, when we look at gossip, it's also what are we listening to that we then might amplify? What are we transmitting? I mean, there is a two aspect. What are we receiving and what are we transmitting? But yeah, you're totally right. There is a two feeling tone with it, definitely.
I was interested this morning when you talked about, you used the example of somebody's music taste not being the same as yours and the feeling tone. And saying, oh, that person's obviously rubbish, I'm paraphrasing a bit. I suppose what puzzles me is I can see myself doing the other way. I can say, well, I'm rubbish. And they've obviously got superior taste. Now, I don't know if this is because I'm English, but I wasn't quite sure how it worked, because in a sense, it's almost like there's a bad feeling tone, and then I'm making it worse by saying I'm rubbish. So it is something that I do quite a lot, not just around music.
But yeah, you see, it again, sure, you can go both ways. So I was actually making the example.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm a bit too...
With that one. But no, I would more likely do it with food than I would do with music, since I really don't know anything about music. So, but you're totally right. It's very important to see that we can, in a way, do it in both ways. You know, like, you look at something together as a music, as a piece of painting, and then, you know, you have... that is very interesting, to look at a piece of painting with an expert. I mean, I have lots of artistic experts in my family in terms of painting. So you look at the thing, and you go for the feeling. Mm, yes, I like it, I don't like it. And then they say, the history of it. And once I was looking at something, and I thought it was nice. Ooh, nice, looks nice, interesting, creative. And then I asked the expert, and she said, it's 10 years late. Oh, it's 10 years late. Like 10 years ago, it would have been really good. Now it's a bit passé. So basically, my tastes were a little passé, too. And this is, so you have the first thing. Like, you know, you feel that you are equal in knowledge, and then you can work with it a little better. Or immediately you go, my knowledge is not as good. I think it's also interesting that when there is an unpleasant feeling tone, to start to self-blame. That, I mean, I think blame is interesting. Other blame. Also, you have an unpleasant feeling tone, it's your fault. Well, actually, it's not their fault. Or there is an unpleasant feeling tone because of someone, but it's my fault. You know, like sometimes somebody seems to be very unhappy and you think this is because of me, but actually it's because of them. So I think it's interesting, blame, self-blame, other blame, generally most of the time comes the unpleasant feeling tone, but it can be self-directed or other-directed. And so it's interesting, both are as interesting. But then there is also the question of the expert. You know, you seeing something, and how much importance do we give to the expert? Because the problem with experts, often, I mean, I have nothing against experts, but sometimes they too, in a way, believe in their expertise. You know, I read a book, and it was a wonderful book, because it was saying that people who make prediction, generally nothing happened that they predict, but they're so sure of it that they will re-predict something else with as much certainty. And And the people who are more uncertain, generally their predictions are generally more accurate. So it's interesting when you are with an expert in terms of the feeling tone. I mean, should I go his way? And then, you know, I put my feeling tone next to his, you know. I must, in order to have a pleasant feeling tone, I must have the same feeling tone as he or her. Or they have this pleasant tone with this, I'm sitting there thinking, come on. And, you know, what do I do with this feeling tone looking at that? So I think it's interesting to look at that area, very much so, very
just
much.
To catch it.
Well, not to blame the blame of the blame, but to basically creatively engage. To me, all this, the gossip, the blame, is really about what happened. What happens? What you have the feeling tone, which kind of, in a way, often give rise to commentary. Then the commentary reinforce sometimes the feeling tone. So in a way, to look at how do I feel? Can I be with it? How long is it going to last? Oh, I have this thought. And then there I would say, is it true? That's an interesting one. Is it true? Yes.
Would you say that it's skillful to distinguish between the feeling tone and then kind of between pleasant feeling tone and then desire or craving? I think it leads to that. And then on the negative, the unpleasant leading to aversion. Or
yeah, I mean, when the Buddha talks about it, generally that's what he does. He says, you know, you have the feeling tone and look what happens. Look how from the feeling tone then can arise craving, I want to repeat it, I want it to continue, etc. And when you have the unpleasant feeling tone, I don't want it, and then amplifying that way. So I think what he is saying is not that we should not have feeling tone, because this is life, this is being in contact. But what he finds important is to see, do we creatively engage with the feeling tone, or do we get caught? And generally, each of them kind of produce a slightly different thing. One is, I want more, I want to repeat it, why is it not happening again, if only. So you have kind of, so saying craving, I think one has to be careful there, because craving is a little abstract. And so personally, I think it's more interesting to experientially, what is it am I doing with the feeling tone? Not just like a generalized craving, because I don't think generalized craving is floating. I think generally you have the feeling tone, and then sometimes you want more, sometimes you want it to continue, sometimes you want to repeat it, sometimes you want... So it's interesting to see what happens. Or can I just appreciated knowing it's not going to last. Just kind of looking what happens. Also, with the unpleasant feeling tone, what do I do? Do I kind of immediately I push it away, or I find a way to avoid it, or what do I do with it? Do I intensify it? Do I add? One thing which I think is really important to see, and I think that's what is so important. Unpleasant feeling tone generally often has to do with pain, with suffering in some way, mental, physical, emotional, relational, etc. So because of something which is happening now, you have an unpleasant feeling tone arising. But then, very quickly, we generally associate it with a past feeling tone. So we associate and we accumulate. That I think is very problematic. Or we associate in anticipation. I am feeling this now, so it means that forever after or whatever. So I think in terms of creatively engaging with the unpleasant feeling tone, to actually look, one of the first things to look at, apart from this immediate wanting to get rid of, which then stops us from really looking at it, looking at how do I associate, where do I go, and generally do I go into the past, do I go into the future, and then through that I accumulate it, instead of this is happening because of that, this is not happening. I mean, sometimes things can happen because of the past, but is it because of that, or is it actually this is happening because of that, but it has a taste which is similar to something possibly in the past, but it is not the same thing. That's something I think is very important in terms of the unpleasant feeling tone, how we so quickly associate with other things, and then you start to think more about the other stuff than the stuff itself right now. And then you you can't address what's happening now, because you try often to address something which is in the past, which you cannot change. And in the future, you never know what's going to happen. And then the problem with the future is that you can really frighten yourself with the future. Instead of, it's happening now, how is it changing, how is it conditioned? Anything else?
Is there time to ask just one question?
Sure, sure, more. I mean, we have still some time.
I'm very interested in, I'm trying to follow up this. I must tell you what the situation is. I'm being treated for something at the moment. It's radiotherapy. And before going on the machine, I have to fill my body with water, my bladder with water. And I have to hold this for a certain time. Now, in addition to all the other things, this is my biggest worry. Okay? And so when I'm sitting there, I just can't help worrying about anticipating that I won't be able to hold this water, because I don't want to flood the machine. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I understand this business of the past,
mm-hmm,
and the anticipation. I hear you saying that it's a question of remaining what is happening and watching it, what is happening in, from moment to moment.
But I
find it difficult to actually.
I would not do that. I would not do that. With your bladder, I would not look at it moment to moment. No, because I know the feeling. I mean, not going through the radio, but doing the same for something else.
Yeah.
And so you have to drink, and then you're kind of full of water, and then so personally I would say don't focus on the bladder, because it makes you want to go even more.
So okay, where do we go from
there? From there I would say actually the breath, to see, yeah, I mean, it's a total normal fear,
yeah.
I mean, the question could be, these things must have happened before. You know,
yeah.
I will be a bit embarrassed and it will be a bit tricky, but I mean, so what? And just to see, yes, I feel that way and it is tricky. And then what is it generally in meditation which helps you to come back to a certain anchoring? And so I would say not to focus on the body.
But that's very difficult. That's very difficult, because it's a big, expensive machine, you know.
Yeah, but you're doing, you see, personally in this situation, we're doing the best we can within the situation. So actually it's kind of looking more, what is it that helps me to be nervous enough that I keep it. I keep my thing together down there. No, because you don't want to be too relaxed either. So you see, you need to be a little nervous, not too nervous, not too little, and then something which helps you not to be so kind of worried about it. So I would say
the breath,
listening to the sound, or doing the phrases, the metaphrases, or. whatever works, I think. Yeah. Whatever.
I tried a mantra.
Yeah.
You know, the repetition of a mantra.
That might be a good one. That might be a good one. Actually, I would say in that situation.
So it might help. It might help if I just say, well, kisarasara, you know, if I lose control, well, too bad.
Exactly. Exactly.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Yeah.
Maybe. It's more about reflection, perhaps. But like, I have a lot of feeling tones. Like really, that I feel a lot in my body. And I just feel a bit frustrated with just like trying to like live life and having to deal with like paying attention to like all these feeling tones and trying to be present with them and stuff. And also like just particularly like how sort of relationships and interaction with people, how that can just be so like intense. So it's not, I don't know, just it's, that's just my observation.
Well, thank you. But you see, I think one thing to be careful about is that we also must not be too obsessive about being aware of all the feeling tone. That's one thing. But to use it when it's useful, that's one thing. Second thing, to see that you will have different feeling tone. So, for example, you might have more impact in terms of the physical sensation. So you might have, some people are more sensitive than others. They have kind of their level of physiological sensitivity can be higher. So that something or sound or sight or whatever it might be might, in a way, raise it a little bit. And so then you have the feeling tone, but then it's more, you have kind of what I would call a, it's more than the feeling tone. You have a certain physical sensation, which a lot of the time possibly is a little unpleasant. And sometimes with that kind of feeling, it may nearly more helpful not to focus on it. And then it might be better, to, because of the sensitivity which can heighten it, to focus on the sound or to focus on the phrasing. With people, that's a little more tricky because, you know, you meet people and they can impact us in different ways, in pleasant feeling tone or unpleasant one. And so I think it's just in a way to see which one, when I am with them, actually it's fairly restful. So although, I mean, they can be kind and everything, but there is a certain peacefulness to be with them. So I'm relatively sure that I'm going to meet them, it's going to be fairly fine. And then you have some which you really enjoy being with them. And then there are some which you're not so sure. You meet them and sometimes it feels really fine and sometimes it doesn't feel fine. And so you're kind of not sure what's going to happen with that person. How am I going to be with them? And I think when we meet this type of person with little, who impact us in a kind of strange way sometimes, to back to this, what is it? So I would have less look at the impact because you know the impact, and more try to look at a certain quality of stability, or a certain quality of spaciousness. If there is certain quality you can connect with. I mean, I used to have this person. I mean, he's, you know, fairly harmless person. But whenever, I don't know, there was a vibe, whenever I was around him, I was like, ooh, you know, like, he was creating intensity within me. You know, so I kind of, so I did not stop meeting the person, but I was trying to kind of, how can I meet this person? So I'm kind of less triggered, in a way, by that person. So it's kind of also, not just in a way looking or being with the feeling tone, but also kind of seeing how can I help myself, how can I bring other elements in. That's what I mean. Yeah.
you made a distinction before between feelings and emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell us a bit more?
Okay, so just briefly. So personally, I think you have the feeling tone, which is impact. The impact. Then often you start to have what I would call a feeling sensation here, which is it feels different. Normally it feels, you know, not much there, but suddenly you feel either something here in the belly or wherever you kind of start to feel something. And generally we go into interpretation. I feel sad, I feel angry, I feel anxious, and then we have lots of things around it. And I find sometimes it's just interesting to what is it I feel, but without naming it immediately, like sadness, anger, this, that. How does it feel? How does it change? Just to observe it. How long does it last? If it goes fast, I will not worry about it. If it's kind of seems to be getting stronger or this, then generally it's turned into what I call a kind of emotion, or possibly very quickly, a disturbing emotion. Because I mean, sadness, anger, happiness, these are just functioning, emotional functioning of our being, like mental functioning, physical functioning, relation functioning. But to see, I find it interesting to see emotion, they're not floating. And outside of the story, which we associated with, what is going on? So if it's not too intense, I would look at it. If it's really intense, then I would not focus on it, because it just make it more intense. And then I would focus on something else. Because that's what the Buddha says. Sometimes it's good to replace it with something else. Sometimes it's good to go inside it. Sometimes it's good to go away from it. So then using different tools. But that may be for another dialogue on emotion. So we have to stop here. And so I wanted to make two announcements.